matter of Esther Maria Alvarez. May we please have appearances of counsel?
Timothy McIntyre, Assistant Counsel for the Office of the County Advocate.
Congress, please. Raymond S. Monda, L-O-N-D-A, Attorney for Elizabeth.
Welcome, counsel. Ms. Alvarez? You'll have the opportunity, if you like, to address the court after counsel does, and I'll give you a moment if you'd like to consult before. And you need not address the court, but you'll have that option. Mr. McNamara.
May it please the court. The Office of Attorney Ethics agrees with the unanimous decision rendered by the Disciplinary Review Board, in which the board determined that respondent knowingly misappropriated client and escrow funds in two separate client matters, the Arias and the Rentogen cases, warranting her disbarment, as well as that respondent should also be disbarred based upon her conduct in her piecemeal disbursements of cash to her client, Ms. Rentogen, a vulnerable client with severe health struggles, in order to assist her with defrauding the Social Security Administration. The board found that there is no dispute that respondent knowingly misappropriated $2,000 in client funds in the Arias matter. Respondent conceded that she did not have Ms. Arias's authorization to take the $2,000. She did so because she needed to pay her mortgage, and she didn't have sufficient personal funds to pay her mortgage without taking that money. Respondent's $2,000 disbursement also constituted the knowing misappropriation of escrow funds because an attorney named Mr. Kuttner was entitled to a portion of the settlement funds due to work that he had done on the case before he had provided the case to the respondent as a transfer. The board concluded that respondent also committed knowing misappropriation of client and escrow funds in the Rentogen case. Respondent admitted that she used Ms. Rentogen's funds without her authorization for her own personal and business uses. Respondent was aware that Ms. Rentogen wanted her funds distributed piecemeal, in cash, and respondent acquiesced to this illegal request in violation of both RPC 8.4B and RPC 8.4C. During the Office of Attorney Ethics investigation and the ethics hearing, respondent provided inconsistent and varying explanations for how she dispersed Ms. Rentogen's funds. First, claiming she transferred the funds from her attorney trust account to her attorney business account so that she could provide Ms. Rentogen with cash. When confronted by the Office of Attorney Ethics with financial records that failed to support that explanation, respondent modified her defense, and she claimed that she used her own funds to pay Ms. Rentogen in cash. When confronted by the Office of Attorney Ethics again with her personal financial records to demonstrate that she didn't have sufficient funds to support payment from her personal accounts, respondent reverted to claiming that she transferred the funds to her attorney business account. And it was only then that respondent admitted that she used cash for her personal and business expenses. Additionally, during the Office of Attorney Ethics' random audit of her financial records, respondent blacked out entries, and she omitted entries from her client ledgers. In this case, the evidence is overwhelming. Respondent admitted during the ethics hearing that she knowingly misappropriated a portion of the Arias funds by issuing a $2,000 check to herself. Respondent knew that under no circumstances was she entitled to the sum of $2,000. And in fact, when Ms. Arias finally signed the settlement statement, at that point, the respondent additionally disbursed to herself the legal fee that she was supposed to be taking. Respondent also disbursed $84,300 of Ms. Rentogen's funds and claimed that she provided Ms. Rentogen with all but $15,900 of the funds in cash. However, the Office of Attorney Ethics audit of her business and her personal financial records revealed that respondent, on multiple occasions, transferred funds from her attorney trust account to her attorney business account in almost the exact amounts that she needed to pay her personal bills. For example, respondent transferred $15,200 of Ms. Rentogen's funds to her attorney business account, and the next day she wrote a check for $15,224.20 to pay her past due rent, with which, if she did not have Ms. Rentogen's funds, she would not have been able to pay. Respondent also failed to provide any evidence whatsoever that she actually provided Ms. Renthigen with the cash. Respondent acknowledged that Ms. Renthigen suffers from mental illness. Respondent described your client as suffering from anxiety, that she's bipolar, and that her behavior was very erratic. Even with all those facts, respondent kept zero records about any monies she said that she gave to Ms. Renthigen. Ms. Jennifer Brandt, who was appointed by Judge Crystal to serve as the guardian ad litem to represent Ms. Renthigen's interests, described Ms. Renthigen as follows. Quote, she was crazy enough from an emotional, psychological point of view that really got in the way of her mental ability to understand things. The board decided that by actively participating in a scheme to defraud the Social Security Administration, that this was a third way that the respondent was subject to disbarment, and the Office of Attorney Ethics agrees. We respectfully request the respondent be disbarred.
Mr. McNamara, can you tell us anything about the circumstances of the ledger forms being blacked out, the $14,000?
Yes. When the Office of Attorney Ethics did the investigation, they noted that there was blacking out of items, and she did that right before the random audit, and the Office of Attorney Ethics could see underneath the black that those were two amounts that she had done without telling her client that she had actually taken that money. Had no explanation for why she blacked out those records.
Did she admit to blacking them out?
She admitted that she was the only person that handled her personal financial records. So yes, that no one else handled her financial records, that she was responsible.
Thank you. Other questions, Senator?
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Londa.
If Your Honors, please. Last night, I participated in the diversionary program course that's offered periodically at the Law Center. And 70%+ of the people who were there because of record-keeping violations. My client has acknowledged that she did not keep good records. And the $2,000 that we're talking about, Mr. McNamara pointed out to you on the Arias matter, remains in my trust account. You directed that there be a transfer of whatever monies were in my client's trust account to mine. And hopefully, with a decision here, you'll give me instructions as to how to dispose of that money. But there was a $2,000 mistake, clearly, that Ms. Alvarez has explained. She never jotted down because it was a brand new account, and one of the starter checks that she used, she forgot about and didn't put it in the ledger. But that money is there. I'm not here to pat her on the back. I think she's made mistakes. What's interesting is that at the disciplinary review board hearing, Mr. McNamara said, and I want to quote from page 6, and for the first time that I've ever seen in one of my hearings, the respondent actually admitted during the hearing to committing knowing misappropriation. I take that as somewhat of a mitigating factor under Rosenthal, which is, I've cited, 90 New Jersey. There is an acknowledgement here that she made a mistake. Made several. But when you look at Wilson, it seems to me that this court has directed that the disbarment occur if the misappropriation was with an intent to steal from or defraud from the person from whom the funds were taken.
I believe that's not part of our law.
Well.
But indeed, the Wade decision repeats prior case law that says intent to steal is not an element.
All right. Then I stand corrected. But I want to point out that there was no intent here on her part. I think she made mistakes, clearly. She's acknowledged them. And I'm asking that you review the Wilson rule and put intent as one of the ingredients that you consider in determining the extent of the discipline to be imposed. The tragedy that I see here is that this lawyer, Ms. Alvarez, having gone through 3 years of these charges, and that's what it's been, surviving two attempts to have her temporarily suspended, is a much better lawyer today than 3 years ago. Much more sensitive to mistakes that have been made. And when we talk about protecting the public, she has been continuing to serve the public under the tutelage of a proctor, which was directed by this court, and she has done that credibly, with no problems. And I ask on her behalf that, yes, discipline is appropriate, clearly. But I'm asking that you consider the circumstances under which she made mistakes. She let her client dictate, to some degree, one of the mistakes that she made with respect to Social Security. She didn't do that for her own benefit. She did that because the client wanted it. I'm not saying it was right, but it certainly was not greed on her part. And I ask that you consider those thoughts in your assessment of what the ultimate outcome of this should be. And if there is a committee that is reviewing the Wilson Doctrine, I ask that you let her fall within the ambit of whatever conclusion that committee comes up with.
Thank you.
I don't know if there's any question. If not, I think I've said what I have to say. Thank you very much.
Do you know if your client would like to address the court?
I do not, but I'll ask her.
Please. You have to come to the center.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The answer is she would like to address the court.
Thank you, Mr. Lund.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. And I appreciate your allowing me the opportunity to speak to you. I stand here before you with no excuse for what was done. I have learned from my mistakes, and perhaps there's no greater punishment than the punishment that I impose upon myself. I have learned that on many an occasion, one cannot allow one's fears, one's reservations, control the situation. And as much as I consider myself a pretty strong-willed, probably high-tempered individual for many a set of circumstances, I failed to do so when the time was appropriate. I can assure Your Honors that I am far from the richest person. My practice is dedicated to those who are far from affluent. I have dedicated the larger part of my practice to the Spanish-speaking community, who for the most part are far from affluent. But I can assure you that what appears to be money taken from the hands of the people I represent, I can assure this court that everyone has received their funds. And in the process, I have ruined my ability to potentially be employed in the future as an attorney after many, many years. As my attorney has expressed to you, I would ask that this court consider that while the case law dictates that funds were misappropriated, everyone, those clients, have received their funds, but four remains in escrow with Mr. Londa. I have no excuse, and whatever Your Honor's dictate is to be the final outcome, it's something that I must accept, and it's something that I must accept knowing that it was in my hands. I appreciate your allowing me this opportunity, and I thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Alvarez. We'll take the matter under advisement.